Corporate underwriting on KPBS offers a unique opportunity for brands to demonstrate their corporate social responsibility as public media brings light to important causes. Your investment can showcase your brand's values and commitment to the public good. Email corporate support at kpbs.org.
Hey there, San Diego. It's time for KPBS Roundtable. I'm Andrew Bracken. Today, we bring you a reporter's roundtable all about San Diego's North County. How are cities there doing in creating housing and meeting state goals? From new housing projects to school board meetings, we hear more about their reporting and what it's like to cover the range of communities and cities across North County. Plus, we hear about a new KPBS series that takes us inside some of San Diego's finest and most fascinating museums. That's ahead on KPBS Roundtable. San Diego's North County isn't exactly known for its housing affordability, but one North County city is exceeding in its state-mandated housing goals, and we're going to talk more about that. Today, we're talking with reporters covering San Diego's North County. Tiggest Lane covers the North County for Voice of San Diego and writes the North County Report. Katie Futterman also joins me. She's the North County Community Reporter with iNewsSource. And finally, Alexander Nguyen's here. He covers the North County here at KPBS. I want to welcome you all here, but just to get things started, you know, what would be your top North County headline this week, Tiggest?
Well, I just wrote a story a few days ago about San Marcos and how it's, you know, the headline was literally, it's crushing its housing goals. But yeah, San Marcos is doing really well toward its state mandated housing goals. And it's something where I was looking kind of at all of the cities. This is the time of year where they have to release their, they call them progress reports toward these goals that they have to create housing for very low income, moderate, and above moderate housing. So San Marcos is doing really well.
Yeah, and I want to dig more into that. We'll get to that. But Alex, what for you is the North County headline this week?
Well,
top of mind.
Well, for me, the biggest one is, I think, the city of Carlsbad, and especially with the fireworks ordinance ban that they just enacted that basically put more fines on people purchasing or possessing illegal fireworks. It's already illegal in San Diego County. They're just adding more to it. Mm. And then, of course, the new e-bikes ordinance is about to be enacted in Carlsbad. I believe it already is enacted a few days ago. But yeah, that's the biggest headlines
for me. And I think something similar is already in place in Encinitas and it's being considered in San Diego. You're right. That's kind of like a
everywhere
bellwether all around the county. Katie, what you know, what's top of mind for you around North County right now?
Yeah, so following the theme of housing, I wrote about a housing development out in Poway and the San Pasqual Band of Mission Indians is calling on the city to like halt progress on the project because they say it is an ancient burial site and they found human remains there. And so I read about that this week.
So just, you know, such a range of topics you cover. And it's, you know, just a lot of cities and a lot of different communities. So mm-hmm. Tiggest, let's go back to this, you know, story you mentioned. Tell us about North City and San Marcos and what their approach is on housing production. As you mentioned, they're doing quite well when I think most of the headlines we're familiar with are maybe cities not meeting these state housing goals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty unique right now to see a city doing this well. Each city has these goals that they're supposed to meet, and a lot of cities say they're kind of unattainable.
And can you talk a little bit more what those goals are? Because there's different levels of affordability. Just paint the picture for us. What a city is, you know, supposed to do from the state.
For sure, yes. So each city has to have a housing element, which is just like a plan of these are the types of housing we're going to make way for. And each city has targets called RENA targets, where it's a specific number in each income category that I mentioned earlier, very low, moderate, and above moderate. So these are income categories. And in each category, every city has to set aside a certain number. So, you know, 530 low-income units, for example. And it's all in this span of 9 years, 2021 to 2029. So cities have to kind of show every year how they're progressing toward their goals. And typically what we see is most cities are kind of like way behind.
Behind the curve, yeah.
Very behind. And by now they should be kind of at least halfway to each target. So San Marcos is the only one in the county that I've seen that is at least halfway in every category, and they've surpassed their above moderate category. So,
and can you talk a little bit about why? Or Alex, I mean, you're familiar with this area of North City, is it kind of like that downtown range? Like, what can you tell us about that area and why they're doing so well with their meeting their goals?
Well, I think it's because San Marcos in particular has the land and basically it's surrounded by urban city, so they can't have the argument that says, well, this is traditionally farmland, we want it more open spaces. They do have a lot of open spaces, to be sure, but I think it's because they're, you know, in between two urban areas that they can't do these things. And of course, I believe Mayor Jones, Rebecca Jones, the outgoing mayor of San Marcos, took a different approach. She, you know, worked with developers to bring more development into the city. I mean, it is one of the fastest growing cities in North County in that regard. They have more people moving there, more homes being built. I mean, Discovery Road, you know, when I started covering North County, was just, you know, a patch of land, very, you know, not rural, but very undeveloped.
Yeah.
You know, shrubs everywhere. But now it's, you know, you go there, you can't even recognize it now. It's just homes being built, hospitals being built. Scripps. Scripps had a parcel of land on that road for 30 plus years intending to build a hospital, and now they are doing it because the population demands it.
So, I mean, I guess the question is, to guess one question I had is, you know, how does what San Marcos is doing contrast with other North County cities? You mentioned they're doing well. A lot of other cities aren't, you know. I think, you know, Alex mentioned some of the geography questions. I'm guessing like up against the coast, maybe they have less land to develop. But tell us more about how this contrasts with other cities.
Yeah, for sure. Alex mentioned it for sure. In my story that I wrote, I talked to Eric Brevald, who's the CEO of the San Diego North Economic Development Council. And that was one of the things he mentioned, was San Marcos had a lot of undeveloped land, which makes it easier to build on land that previously didn't have development. So that was one of the factors. And then North City is this downtown that San Marcos is creating. So Rebecca Jones mentioned to me, like, we were able to plan around that and concentrate a lot of the heavier density projects in North City because it didn't previously have a downtown. And then that, you know, compared to other cities, yeah, definitely the geography plays a factor. And then, you know, a lot of cities on the coast, smaller cities, they believe that they don't have the room to build. So like Solana Beach, for example, is a very small coastal city, and they have been critical of the state mandates because they say we don't have the room.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to build?
And I'm sure politics, of course, plays a role into every, you know, housing conversation we have. Katie, you reported on, you know, the lack of available affordable housing in Encinitas around Section 8 housing. Can you tell us a little bit about your reporting on that?
Yeah, Encinitas is certainly, and I know Tigas has covered that as well, like the politics in the city is very much around housing, and it's a little bit of a different attitude about, you know, building more housing and viewing that state mandate. I wrote about Section 8 wait lists around the whole county. those are, you know, that's the federal program that provides housing vouchers, and basically found that a lot of San Diego County and the city serves a lot of areas, but a few places have their own housing authorities. And I saw that of those places, Encinitas is one of them, and they were either like closing their wait lists or they were basically stopping altogether. That was in large part because the federal spending hasn't necessarily kept up. They've all of the housing authorities said that they've had to spend more and more on, you know, the cost of rent has increased. So the amount that they have to spend has increased.
So, yeah, a lot going on there. Alex, last time we spoke on Roundtable, we talked about another affordable housing project, this one in Del Mar, Seaside Ridge. Can you kind of remind us what that project was? And maybe we can chat about where it is now because it's still facing challenges, right?
Yeah. So that project is on the South Bluff on in Del Mar above Dog Beach.
So right near the racetrack, that whole kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's like right next to Solana Beach. Yeah. What happened is that property owner wants to build affordable housing on that bluff. And the city says, oh no, you didn't fill out the correct paperwork, so therefore consider it incomplete. And the developer is arguing, no, this, you know, we filed everything we needed. And plus, at the time when we were filing this, you guys didn't have a affordable housing plan. So therefore, it qualifies for a builder's remedy, which cuts a lot of the red tape. And it's back and forth, back and forth. And then the attorney general stepped in and says, guys, I think, Del Mar, you are in violation of the new law that went into effect earlier this year that says cities are supposed to, cut a lot of the red tape to get affordable housing built. So that's where we are at. Del Mar has sat down with the representative of the California Attorney General, and they haven't come to a resolution yet.
And Tigas, talking about Seaside Ridge, I think there is inherently a lot of this push-pull with, the cities and the state.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about how Seaside Ridge kind of fits into these housing stories you're covering and what it says about North County.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely tells like a larger story about, the tension between the state's policies and what cities want to do. And a lot of North County cities or city leaders are more in favor of local control, even San Marcos leaders. So that's, it's definitely an example of that. Del Mar doesn't want to approve this project. They've said that they have enough housing planned already. They don't need this project. They're trying to get an affordable housing project going on the Del Mar Fairgrounds, which has been a little bit like shaky at times. Mm-hmm. The Fairgrounds Board has, almost pulled the plug on the project a couple times. So we still don't even know if that's going to be to ever come into fruition. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting to see like Del Mar leaders want to stick to their plan. And then these developers are coming in and saying, no, we have a project and we actually can move forward with it because of state housing laws. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And the developer is suing the city. So that's definitely going to be something to watch out for.
Katie, earlier you mentioned some of your reporting about this housing project in Poway called Hidden Valley Ranch. Tell us more about what's happening and what you're following there.
Yeah, so I'm sort of just following to see what, the city's reaction will be, the city of Poway and also the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This project was first approved back in like 2003, and then I think there's been some changes and meetings since, but it's definitely a long time in the making. And this is, just something that the tribe has been, calling attention to. Now they found they say they knew it was basically some sort of sacred and special site, but then they actually, did find the evidence of human remains, and they're calling for a stop work order. There's been some partial stop work orders so far, but they're calling for a total stop work order. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
Alex, just kind of wrapping up this housing piece, what else are you following or what are you looking forward to seeing how things play out in North County?
You know, it's interesting because we see a lot of coastal city leaders opposing the state mandate on housing. For example, in Encinitas, they got rid of three of their council members, the citizen did, who are very pro-housing, and installed three who aren't, who wants more local control. So you kind of see this push back and forth, especially in coastal cities or wealthier cities, that you see this happening. And also, that's kind of interesting about Poway, because Poway is you know, more inland, and they do actually have the room to grow. So I'm really interested into seeing how Poway deals with this housing issue as well.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I want to talk after the break a little bit more about, you know, the different communities, because we say North County, but we're talking about a lot of different places, right? So yeah. We'll continue in just a moment.
Watch programs on your schedule with the KPBS Plus streaming service. See new episodes of Nature and Nova, latest news from PBS NewsHour and KPBS Evening Edition, local shows like Ken Kramer's About San Diego. Learn more at kpbs.org/kpbsplus.
This is KPBS Roundtable. I'm Andrew Bracken. Today we're talking with reporters covering San Diego's North County. My guests are Tigas Lane from Voice of San Diego, Katie Futterman from iNewsSource, and KPBS's Alexander Nguyen. Alex, I want to move over to the Palomar Airport in Carlsbad. There's been some news about new flights there, but tell us what's been happening and how community members are feeling about it.
Well, you know, that airport has been there for ages. And, you know, some of the people who are living near the airport do not want commercial airlines to fly out of that airport. They say it's because of noise pollution. And what's interesting is that the county says this airport has always had, you know, commercial flights. But for the past, I believe, 10 or so years, there haven't been any commercial flight out of the airport because American Airlines pulled out and then United pulled out. But now they're back. And the county says that has always been a part of the master plan for the airport. But community members just say it's too noisy for them. They, you know, the flights are constantly flying at all hours of the night, even though the commercial airlines only have 4 flights out of Palomar at this point. And then American Airlines recently just wants to add more flights into Carlsbad. I believe it's just 2 more flights flying into Carlsbad Airport. And a group called Citizens for a Friendly Airport has sued the county and the airlines over this issue. And right now it's still in the process in the courts.
Katie, I think, you know, for folks that live, like myself, that live closer to downtown San Diego, we're familiar with what it's like to live near an airport. Yeah, what jumps out to you, because I think it's also United does some flights there, right? Tell us more about Palomar and what's going on there.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things about the airport is that unlike the San Diego airport, it doesn't have a mandatory noise curfew, so it can't legally like enforce a mandatory curfew. It only has a voluntary curfew. And we've already seen with the airlines, both in multiple leases, the airlines have basically proposed flights that are outside their voluntary curfew, and the new proposed American flights will be landing after 10 p.m. And yeah, the residents who live nearby are pretty upset. The county says, and the FAA also says this, that basically the county has no ability to like say no to the lease, because as long as they're deemed safe, it's not up to the county. They say it would be basically discriminatory to say no to any lease. The residents nearby dispute that. Also notable is that the city of Carlsbad also joined one of the lawsuits and is suing against it. So it's going to be really interesting, because there's now like multiple lawsuits and they're kind of changing as new leases come through. Also important to note that a lot of people, you know, are excited about these flights. If you live in North County, you don't have to commute down to San Diego airports a lot easier. So yeah, it's definitely a contentious issue. If you ask different people, they're going to, you know, feel differently.
Yeah, for people in North County, what they're looking at is either flying, going all the way down to San Diego International, or going to John Wayne, or going to Ontario. Those are the three options to fly out. Now that Carlsbad, even though it doesn't fly to a lot of cities, it does fly to, you know, a few of the hubs. So, you know, they can fly to Phoenix and then catch a flight from Phoenix anywhere, because that is one of the hubs for the airlines.
Yeah, and a sign of just, you know, how much is happening there. You know, Carlsbad has become like a booming scene, and other oceanside scenes for food and other things. I want to kind of just zoom out a little bit and talk about how you all kind of approach covering North County. As we mentioned, there's, you know, the coastal cities, there's inland, there's just such a range of different communities. And Tegis, you've been covering this region for about 4 years now.
Yes.
You know, how do you explain to someone who may not be familiar with the region what North County is and kind of how you approach covering it?
Yeah, it's definitely like a unique beat or coverage area because it's so vast and there's so many pieces to it that are so different. I mean, I just, when I talk to people about my coverage, you know, I explain that North County is a region, but there's so many, the cities are all unique. There's such a difference between inland North County and coastal North County. And even within that, like, Escondido's different than like Vista and San Marcos. Like, these are all very unique pockets of communities, and even within the communities, there's different neighborhoods and just groups of people that are, you know, passionate about different things. So I honestly just, my approach is to just try to be plugged in as much as I can. I try to talk to different people in different cities and different neighborhoods, people in different professions and sectors. And I try to just like keep my ear to the ground as much as possible to try to understand what each community cares about and what they're paying attention to in any given moment. But, you know, it can be difficult. I constantly feel like I'm missing things, and I'm sure you guys can relate to
that.
Yeah,
I'm seeing both of you nod. Katie, you're the newest one on this beat, and you grew up in New York City, which is quite different than, you know, North County. Tell us about your approach. I mean, do you agree with kind of
definitely,
what Tegis said?
Definitely echoing that, and definitely reading a lot of her stories when I came here. But I sort of describe myself as like going on almost like a listening tour around the county and just driving around and trying to be as many, I go to as many events and meetings as I can, even if I'm not like writing a story about them, just to sort of get a sense of the place. And yeah, any given week, I feel like I have a million stories I could write, and it's just sort of figuring out how to best spend my time and what to write about. But yeah, there's so many stories I want to write. And
but do you focus on like a particular city or I mean, how do you wrap your, how do you choose your focus?
I definitely find myself, like, when I write about one place or one city, it starts to build on itself. And, you know, I love writing those, like, follow-up stories that go beyond just the surface-level decision. So I think I've sort of, so far in my, like, 7 months here, I've sort of found myself, like, maybe I'll spend a few weeks going down sort of one path and then try to, like, shift over. But yeah, and it's really hard to cover everything.
Well, one of those stories you covered, you reported on sort of these parents and their involvement in the local school board in Encinitas. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of how you approach telling that story, how you found that?
Yeah, one of the things I've really loved about covering North County is everyone's been so excited to, like, meet me and share stuff about what's going on. And people, you know, different places are different, but there's a lot of, like, civic engagement. I really liked finding that. And so I started to look into, I had done some education coverage in the past and started to look at the school board, and I saw this group of parents who go to every single school board meeting. And I don't know how many of you guys have gone to a lot of school board meetings. They're not always the most entertaining and fun meetings. And they go to every single one, and they make these, like, long, they make these Instagram reels, and like, they have a whole social media, and they write about it, and they try to, like, better educate other parents about it. And I just thought that was really cool. So I wrote about that. And
yeah, you really get a sense of just their engagement, like the level of engagement. And we know school boards have become such, like, a,
yeah,
you know, such a space where people are kind of, I don't know, getting involved. And
yeah, I think it definitely came to be out of a whole bunch of, you know, controversy and culture wars that were going on a few years back, but has kind of morphed into something sustainable.
You know? Alex, you grew up, spent much of your childhood here in San Diego. You've known North County even before you were covering it, which you've been covering for several years. And again, you cover a kind of a range of stories. I guess just, you know, what's your thought about North County and how you approach covering all these different communities?
Well, unlike, you know, Katie and Tegas here, because of the medium we cover here at KPBS, I have to look for stories that are visual so that we can have that visual element. So while it's interesting, we talk about, you know, some policy that's being passed and stuff like that, I sometimes have to skip over that and go into more something that's more visual element so that we can cover it on air. But I also kind of look at different topics and issues, and also try to see if I can cover other parts of the county, of North County, that has not been covered a lot. For example, like lately, we've been covering a lot of Carlsbad because of, you know, the incident with the kid and the bicycle and all of that stuff. And then I noticed, like, oh, we've been covering Carlsbad a lot, so let's see what other cities are doing and see if we can get more of that. And funny that Katie just covered Poway, because I was looking at Poway and going, I haven't covered Poway in a while, ever since the controversy with the Poway councilman.
It's like a lot of synergy. You guys are all kind of filling the pieces. I mean, Alex, just to call out one of you mentioned this, like, you know, importance of visual storytelling. One recent story you did was, you know, we all know North County is famous for its beaches, but you did this story on Del Mar and a new ordinance on beach holes. I think this clip just kind of really, I don't know, is an interesting piece of the story.
I mean, it's a very Del Mar thing to do, but I totally get it.
I just love that part of the moment. But it is a very visual story. But tell us about the problem of beach holes. We have about a little over 2 minutes right now.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny at the way that Del Mar approached it, but it is a serious issue in that, you know, Del Mar is banning people from digging holes bigger than 2 feet or deeper than 2 feet, because they don't always fill them up, so that, you know, lifeguards, when they run to rescue somebody and if the surf is high up or the tide is high up, they can't see those holes, so they trip and fall, or their trucks get caught in those things. So it is a, you know, legitimate issue. It was just funny that they say, well, you know, the whole story is about kids going to the beach and digging holes, and parents going, well, you know, kids, they dig holes at the beach. But it is a serious issue. So I think, you know, Del Mar specifically saying, you know, bigger than 2 feet or deeper than 2 feet is a legitimate
concern. There is a real reason behind it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, but it is a fun story just to kind of sum up the range of how you all cover. You know, we're kind of closing in the end here. So just real briefly, I mean, take us, what are you following next? What's on your mind going into next week?
Yeah, I definitely want to continue to keep a pulse on housing. I think it's interesting to see how officials keep, you know, covering that and how they're evolving with their thought processes on that.
Katie, what about you?
I'm excited to see how all the elections play out. I know that's not necessarily next week, but
it's just coming up. No, I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, it's not far off, is it?
Yeah, there's a lot going on this election season, so it'd be cool to follow.
Alex, more beach holes? What else?
No, actually, when you talk about North County, there's a lot of rural area in North County that is farmland, and I'm looking into a story where, you know, people who own these land that used to be farm, and they do not want it to become another development, so they wanted to make it continue to be farm, but obviously some kids who grew up say, I don't want to be a farmer anymore. So they're looking at ways in which they can, you know, pass it on to somebody who wants to farm and keep the land producing food. And there's a program called Farm Linking, which basically says you own this farm and there's some people who wants to farm. So let's link you guys together and let's make that work.
We'll look forward to all your future reporting. I've been speaking with North County reporters Katie Futterman from iNews Source, Alexander Nguyen from KPBS, and Tiggest Lane with Voice of San Diego. And we'll have links to some of the stories we've been talking about on our website as well as on our show notes today. Tiggest, Katie, Alex, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Up next, we hear about a KPBS series introducing us to some of our region's best museums. Stay tuned. You're listening to KPBS Roundtable.
Hola, friends.
In this episode of Port of Entry, we unpack the fear, headlines, and misconceptions that often shape how people in the U.S. see the border.
We sit down with Tijuana native Jorge Meraz, the host of Crossing South, who spent years showing different sides of the region. We share what it's really like to cross between Tijuana and San Diego as part of everyday life.
You don't want to miss this episode. Catch Port of Entry wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KPBS Roundtable. I'm Andrew Bracken. What are the essential ingredients that make a city truly world-class? Is it the restaurants? Vibrant nightlife? Maybe it's architecture? All good choices. But my next guest might offer another suggestion. To be a great city, you need great museums. John Carroll is a reporter and anchor here at KPBS. He's also the creator of the Museum a Month series on KPBS. And John, welcome to Roundtable.
Thanks, Andrew. Good to be here.
Great to have you here. So what makes museums so special to the makeup of a city or a county like San Diego?
Well, I think that museums do a lot of things. They sort of in general inform us and connect us to our past. They can speak to things happening in the present, and in some instances, they can give us an eye into the future. They also just bring lovely experiences that maybe slow us down from the hectic pace of life nowadays, and that's worth a lot. So, yeah, a lot of things.
Well, that covers a lot of ground.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, tell us about the inspiration behind this series.
So it's called Museum a Month. I am friends with Bob Lehman, who is the past executive director of the Museum Council. And we were talking one night about the museums. There's a lot of them, dozens of them in San Diego County. And I had for a number of years done a story every year in February where they have the half off during the month promotion.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you know, there are just so many amazing museums in San Diego County. And I think especially that the KPBS audience has a higher level of interest than maybe the greater society in that. And I said, let's think of something where we can do more regular stories, regularly occurring stories on museums. So we kind of hatched this idea for a museum a month. I went to the powers that be here at KPBS and pitched it, and they were happy about it. And so we began last October. And kind of the idea behind it, generally speaking, was to highlight the existence and the stories of museums that really aren't on people's radar, that are not the big 18 in Balboa Park, because there are many, many, many more museums that are not in the park.
And, you know, I want to talk more about some of those that you've introduced us to. But, you know, I'm wondering if you can tell us what you look for when choosing a museum to feature. Like, what captures your curiosity?
Well, first of all, the relative unknownness of it. That's kind of the guiding light to this thing. But also, it's just, you know, Bob and I will talk about different museums. We will often try and link a certain museum to something happening. For instance, we did in February the San Diego African American Museum of Fine Art, a museum without walls, because it was Black History Month. So if we can do a connection, a tie like that, that's mm-hmm. that's very helpful. But also some of it just comes down to things that I read about or he'll tell me about that I just find fascinating, and I think, okay, well, I want to do a piece on
those.
That. Yeah.
So, in your latest episode, you introduce us to the Navy SEALs Museum, and you spoke with Brian Drexler, there, executive director of that museum. Here's some of what he told you.
A museum's job is to present facts, and not opinions, but facts. When you look at naval special warfare and 80 years of rich, adaptive, innovative history, and telling that story accurately, I do think is very important.
I mean, the Navy SEALs capture such, I don't know, kind of such a space in military, you know, in the role they play here. And we know many of them are here in San Diego. But tell us more about the museum and what you learned.
So I want to first say that there is another Navy SEAL museum. That's why we always call this one Navy SEAL Museum San Diego. They're the big granddaddy is in Fort Pierce, Florida. So this is the second one. It is downtown. It's a two-story building. It's where the Museum of Modern Art used to be. And then they moved up to, I think it's La Jolla. And so it's right across the street from the Santa Fe Depot. I'm fascinated by the SEALs and what they do and everything. And as I say it toward the top of the story, it's lifting the veil on a formerly secret world,
right?
Because the SEALs were not out for publicity. They don't like to be in the spotlight at all. But the museum has really done a really great job of taking control of the narrative and telling the story about how they came about, what they do. And then there are different features inside the museum. Do you want me to talk about that a little bit? Because that's interesting.
Tell us.
Okay. So first of all, when you walk in, there's an immersive big three huge screens around you where you get a never-before-seen look at the SEALs in training off of Coronado. They had special permission to go shoot that, and it's just really, really interesting. There's a wall of remembrance, which is interactive screens where you can look at SEALs who have died in the line of duty and see the stories behind what they did. And then upstairs, it's more really interesting artifacts, equipment, different stories about different raids, like the Osama bin Laden thing in 2011. And then what just really surprised me and I was so impressed by is before you leave, there is a display they call a call to service. And you hear stories from retired SEALs on a big video screen. And then right next to that is a smaller interactive screen where you can look at different ways to serve that have nothing to do with the military. And Brian really made that point that we want folks here to leave if they want to join the SEALs or the Marine Corps or the Navy mm-hmm. or the Air Force, whatever, fine. But the importance is to just do something to serve your community, service above self.
Your first episode in the series brought you to the Barona Cultural Center and Museum. And we have a clip here. You're talking to Raymond Welch, chairman of the Barona Band of Mission Indians. Let's listen to some of that.
As he turns the layers of cellophane, we take a visual trip from the past to the present.
Pre-contact, this is where our people were.
Welch turns a layer.
As contact, as everything contact comes in.
Contact with Europeans.
See, Mexico, this is when Mexico was California.
Right. Yeah. California became part of the United States in 1850. In 1870, President Grant set land in the Pala and San Pascual Valleys aside for the tribe. But in 1891, they were forced to move.
Let's see, there's the original reservation, Capitan Grande.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
So I like that clip because we hear some of the interaction and how you're kind of taking us on this journey to learn more about our history, more about, you know, the museum itself. Tell us more about, you know, how you approach telling the story of a museum like this one.
I go in with as few preconceived notions as possible because I know I'm always going to learn things and be surprised by things when I'm in there. What he was doing there was turning these cellophane layers that lay on top of each other and show the history of the tribe through the years, and as he talks about when white Europeans came and all that ensued after that, which it was made by, they have a school there right next to the museum, the Barona School, and it was made by students, I think seventh graders, hope I got that right. That was back in October. but it's just wonderful how they tie in the experience of children and making sure that the children know the story of the tribe and what has gone on over the years, the attempts to wipe them out, and et cetera, et cetera. And then, Andrew, there was another surprise for me. It bowled me over. When I was talking to you yesterday about this story, I couldn't remember the name of the architect, and I think it's Frederick Gill. I know someone out there is going to hopefully say, yes, that's right. He was a very famous San Diego architect, and he built a lot of beautiful homes around San Diego as the architect of. And when he found out about Barona settling where they are now, he said, I want to help you build a design and build houses and a church. And so he has his own room dedicated to him. And it just, when you find surprises like that on a story, even beyond the museum stories, that's kind of, as a reporter, something that you want to make sure that you convey to the audience. Like, whoa, you aren't going to believe this. This is really something.
I think that's Irving Gill. Does that
sound? Irving, thank you. Yes, I knew the Gill was right.
I mean,
Irving.
You cover a wide range of different museums, but also kind of all over the county. You take as kind of a window into the Old West at one El Cajon one. I recommend people, you know, try that out, watch that episode. But you also, you know, even push our image of what a museum can be. And I want to talk one recent story you did. You took us into the former home of the late artist James Hubble. You know, it is a museum in one sense, but it's more, I mean, it's just like a piece of art.
They don't call it a museum.
Okay. Tell us about it.
The executive director made that clear. So when I discuss what this thing is, Museum a Month, we use that because it's a catchy, alliterative phrase, you know. But it's really about museums and cultural institutions. And Ilan Layel, that's the name of it up there, is most assuredly a cultural institution. And it is just wild. I had looked at it online before I went up there with our photographer, and all I can say is watch the story and then go visit it, because it's like I've never dropped acid in my life, but I would imagine that that's what it's like looking at buildings. They're wild, out of this world, remarkable, beautiful structures.
And embedded into nature, right? And
totally embedded into nature. That was his big thing.
I mean, you talked about how you learn something from each museum you visit, but I mean, are there a couple moments that stand out to you that you could share?
Well, I'll tell you, most recently, I knew this was part of the Navy SEAL Museum, but I wasn't quite ready for it. They have a virtual reality exhibit where you accompany a SEAL team on this mission to rescue hostages off of a tanker. And you're in a thing they call a 4D chair, and it kind of moves a little, and there's rushing air and stuff. And it's unnervingly real. But it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's in your story.
In the story. That's right. Boy, I don't know if we have enough time for me to sit here and contemplate. There have been so many moments. The African American Museum, really cool thing that he did. It's a, I would call it high tech, where it's a museum within a museum. You aim your phone at these things on the floor, and they bring up virtual displays in front of you. So you can walk around, and you're seeing things virtually, but also the real displays there, too. And in a limited space that they had, I thought that was just a really interesting approach, and it really worked. And I could go on and on, Andrew, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, we started talking about just, you know, the role museums play in our society. And I'm just wondering, you know, after working on this series for several months now, how would you characterize San Diego museums and you know, what it adds to our region?
Well, first of all, they're all over the map, both figuratively and literally. There's the Surf Museum up in Oceanside, down to whatever there is down on the, along the border, and all in between. You started off this segment by talking about continually trying to lift San Diego County, San Diego City County, to a world-class place. And that just doesn't happen unless you have a panoply of museums and a wide offering of different stuff. So I really try to bring those forward to our audience and hopefully drive numbers for the museums. I want them to succeed. It's a struggle for even the biggies in Balboa Park. And so, especially these days with cuts in funding and whatnot, so they really need the support, and they're so worth supporting. If you just go, take a chance, go see the Reuben H. Fleet, go see the Miniature Museum of Engineering and Miniatures in Carlsbad. That has bowled me over, too. There are just so many different offerings. The Museum of Music up in the North County, it's almost never-ending. And I hear music creeping in.
Well, John Carroll, he's a reporter here and anchor here at KPBS. You can find his ongoing Museum a Month series on our website at kpbs.org. We'll link to that. John, thanks so much.
Thanks, Andrew. A lot of fun.
And that'll do it for Roundtable this week. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any thoughts on today's show, you can always email us at roundtable@kpbs.org or leave us a message at 619-452-0228. Roundtable's technical producer is Brandon Trufa. The show is produced by Ashley Rush. Brooke Ruth is Roundtable's senior producer. And I'm your host, Andrew Bracken. Have a great weekend. It's hard to ignore that childhood is changed in a lot of ways, and one of the most striking reasons is the role technology is playing in it. From the NPR Network and KPBS, this is Screen Time, a podcast featuring conversations about technology and kids in today's digital age. Listen to Screen Time wherever you get your podcasts.